all my chippies in podcast land. Welcome to Blackanese Chick. I am your host, Rhett Thompson, and I am so very glad that you took out this moment in time to download and spend a moment in time with me. Oh my God, let me tell you, I just came back from the kids' school. I have a kid, a daughter. I call her the kid, just because I don't like using her name. You know, in this day and age, everybody has the right to their, to setting up their own electronic footprint. So, when she's ready to reveal her name, she will reveal her name. So, her alias, I've given her the kid. So, the kid is, the kid's 10. The kid is 10. It's a girl, if you haven't figured it out, in the fifth grade. Just came back from her school because today is February. Schools do a lot of Black History Month events. Some very pronounced, you know, maybe there's a play or an oratory speech contest about Black people and how amazing they are and how they've contributed to their country. Those, I feel, are legit Black History Month events. Maybe there's a mini concert. Maybe there's a little art exhibit. Something along those lines. And then sometimes I feel, because it's a public school, sometimes I feel that some of these events may be a little bit on the manufactured side. Like, we gotta have some events. Let's put together African American Eat Lunch with Your Child Day. Which was today. No big whoop, you just show up and eat lunch with your kid. I don't know if it's an invitation or an order. African Americans, eat lunch with your child. Or African Americans, eat lunch with your child today. The more you know. But the cafeteria, they did do a great job. I had an excellent meal. We had honey glazed barbecue chicken, greens, sweet potato, and then there were seasoned french fries. At least I got the seasoned fries. I did not feel like having the Spanish rice, because that's what they called it, Spanish rice. I didn't just dub that. They called it Spanish rice. The Latin cafeteria ladies dubbed it Spanish rice, so that is what I'm going with. Yeah, there's nothing like having a set of older ladies whipping up your food. Because you know there was some love, a little bit of disgruntledness maybe mixed in there. But overall, you know, they trying to work it out. They putting their foot in it. They're working it out. I always feel great confidence when I see a chef or a cook. And well, I guess chef is more like contest or fancy restaurant. Something listed under the Zagat survey. That's a chef. A cook is someone with an apron that may have some gravy stains and they got that puffy shower cap on top, and you can tell they taste every bit of the food that they put together before they serve to the folks. Chefs look like they have time to work out. At least the ones I see on Food Network. But I love seeing a cook. I don't care, Black, white, Latin, whoever. I want to see somebody who looks like they enjoy eating food, cooking my food. And given the parameters that this is a cafeteria in a public school, the ladies, they worked it out. They asked me, Mommy, how you like? It's good. I said, yeah, for $3. This was actually quite tasty for it to be a cafeteria lunch. I like this better than last year. Good. You welcome, Mommy. You welcome. They worked it out. Because they worked it out so well, I am quite full. Not gonna lie. Quite full. I am this close to getting the itis. For those of you chippies who know what that is, explain to the ones who don't. If you don't, go to Urban Dictionary. Now, the itis is I guess the original term was the God, now I'm playing into non-political hands. But from what I understood when I was growing up, it was like niggaitis. So you took all the bad negatives about nigga, the word nigga, as in being lazy, no good, up to no good, about to go to sleep on the job, and mix it in with itis, like it's a disease. So generally, after Thanksgiving, you get niggaitis. But because we don't say nigga anymore, except me dropping it 10 times in the last 30 seconds, we just shorten it to the itis. So, to use it as an example from the dictionary, Grandma cooked so well on Thanksgiving that we all got the itis and fell asleep before the football game. That's how you work it, the itis. So I have the itis right now. I'm really close to it, really close. But I felt inclined, this deep desire to share this next bit with you. And I told myself, I cannot rest until I do so. So maybe I won't have the itis by the time we're done. Remember the after school special? I guess for those of a certain age, those of a certain age remember that there was limited channels. You didn't have your own channel. This was before all of the Disneyfication and Nickelodeonization and the Cartoon Networking of it all. Now you can get children's program 24/7, 365. But there was a time that every once in a while on network television, somewhere between 2 and 5 o'clock, they would, instead of the regularly scheduled programming, they would have an after-school special. The idea being you would come home after school and watch this drama, usually half hour to an hour drama, that starred kids or preteens or teens that would act out some type of situation that may or may not, you may or may not encounter, but they would wrap it up with a lesson at the end, like a morality tale. A morality tale starring teenagers. Don't do drugs. Don't steal. Don't rob liquor stores. Everything would be wrapped up. The dialogue, not always perfect. Usually the people starring in these things were white middle class folks with beautiful blonde hair and perfect skin. So, of course, we're going to watch this. The dialogue, a little bit wooden. Gee, Mom, I never thought of it that way. I will never hang around a bad crowd again. I didn't mean to rob that liquor store, but I understand now peer pressure is what made me do it. I won't do it ever again. And then they hug and they live happily ever after. The more you know. That's what NBC that does that. Does that NBC still do that? That's when they have their own mini morality tale, usually in the span of a 20-second commercial with a little star flying across the sky. The more you know. Don't rob liquor stores. The more you know. Don't hit your pets with a baseball bat. The more you know. I was going to think of a third one, but clearly it's the itis kicking in. After school specials. I would watch after school specials on the occasion, on the rare occasion. Not only because I had very limited access to television during school days because my whole focus was always on homework. But part of it was because I didn't feel like I could totally relate to the kids in the after-school special. First of all, I knew back then that I was not going to be that kid robbing the liquor store because I knew people. I knew people who had uncles slash mothers' boyfriends who had robbed liquor stores and they didn't end up well. I didn't need that spelled out in a special to figure out what was going to happen. But I just felt that these kids lived in this bubble world where everything got resolved. No one got whoopings, or as they would say now, spankings. No one was asked to cut a switch off the tree or go get my belt. You robbed a liquor store, I'm going to beat your bitch. You know, they never did that in the after school special. So it just didn't feel like something I could relate to. So I usually didn't watch it. It was their world was just too perfect and too pat, and everybody was full of understanding, and all the kids had adults who would explain things to them and relate to them on a certain level. I just didn't quite have that. One lesson I did take away that I thought was positive is to be confident, to have confidence, to not worry about peer pressure, to be okay with being yourself. Now, that's a great lesson to try to absorb, but implementing, kind of tough when you're pre-teen, tween, teen, young adults. I always felt like the outsider growing up. I grew up in what? Let's say it, Akron, Ohio. At least one an episode, Chippies. One an episode. Yes, I grew up in Akron, Ohio. Very middle size city in the Midwest. Very limited world. Everyone I knew was poor or working class, very limited world. And it was the only world I knew, and I just wanted to belong. My mom is Japanese, my father is African American. They split shortly after my younger sister was born, and things were rough. It's rough when you're poor and you don't fit in. Not black enough to be black. Not Asian enough to hang with the one other Asian family in town. No, there were more than that, but they're way on the other side of the town. Always just wanted to fit in. I knew that I should be myself, but deep down, there's something about us humans. We want to be part of a flock, a herd. We want to be part of a group. Want to belong to something. I eventually made my way. But those experiences of not having that confidence and not feeling like I belonged, I just wanted to make sure as a parent that my kid, the kid, would. How can I say this? That she would be okay with being herself. That she would have confidence to be herself. So, even at a very, very, very young age, I encouraged her to do her own thing. To do her own thing. So, if she was interested in dressing a certain way or playing with toys that were not stereotypical girl toys, I was totally fine with that, totally open with that. And I laid the ground rules and the foundation early on. Look, you can do these things as long as when it comes down to business, as in going to school, wearing your school uniform, focusing on your work, as long as you take care of these things, I don't mind if you express yourself in this other way. And once you give a child that kind of leeway, they will run with it. I will never forget my daughter when she was like maybe four or five years old. She told me she wanted a pair of boots. Now, we live in Miami, Florida. We have absolutely no need for boots. But she wanted some riding boots, and I got them for her. On sale. On sale at an outlet. But if that's what she wanted to do, fine. And I did not force her to wear those boots only with certain outfits. So if she wanted to wear those black riding boots with a T-shirts that had stripes and polka dotted leggings and a neon green tutu, she would be more than free to do so. And she did. I'm not one of those mothers that are like, that does not match. That does not match. Go back. Go back and change. Unless, only on a few rare occasions, when it's time to deal with certain family members, just because I don't want to hear the mouth. I'd rather just be like, look, just for today, just change the leggings, because I don't want to hear such and such's mouth. There's nothing like being judged by your own family. You just didn't have time to look at your own child walk out the door. It's like, shut the fuck up. So usually those times, or if we're going to a, like, you know, if you're going to church, you know, you want to look presentable, don't look crazy. You know, you can look wild, just don't look like you've fallen off totally at church. You can look like you've fallen off someplace else, but not at church. You know, certain parameters. I'll never forget about 3 years ago, the kid was about 6, 7 years old. She announced to me, Mommy, I do not want you to buy me any clothes that are pink anymore. I am tired of wearing pink. My color is black. That is my favorite color. That is what I would like you to to buy. And I was like, wow, you want to wear black clothes? Yes, I want to wear black clothes. Black is my favorite color. It's very fashionable and very stylish. I was like, and it's very dark. And you know what? Let's just go this route, because I'd rather have my child wear all black now than be shot in my bed when she's 16. Is that what it takes, people? No, I don't think it'll get to that point. But yeah, she has a lot of clothing in her closet that's black. You would think that either someone died, God forbid, she's prepared. She's prepared for a funeral. Or she's working at the Mac counter at Macy's. So I encourage my daughter to march to the beat of her own drummer. How much did I believe that? I found out. You try to instill these things in your child because you're hoping that it will prepare them for the world. But sometimes you're not sure if you've done a good enough job. You just gotta watch and listen carefully. I went to a meeting at her school. Went to a meeting at her school the other day, and it was predominantly parents. There's a few kids, and we're leaving, and this little short Latin girl walked by. Little chubby girl. Like, I wasn't sure if she was in the fifth grade or not. So she was so short. So the kid and I are walking one direction, and the little girl is walking the opposite direction. We're about to pass each other, and the mother and me just came out, and I said, "Oh, are you going to say hi to your friend?" Because I could tell that the kid recognized her. There was a look of recognition in her face. The little girl, I know that little girl heard me. And she just kept on walking. That little girl just kept on walking. She looked dead at my daughter and at me and just kept walking. And my daughter was like, "No." I said, "Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Did that girl just walk by us and not say hi?" And my daughter said, "Yep." I said, "Who is that? Is that somebody's little sister?" So I was like, "No, that's one of the popular girls." I was like, "What? Kids just walking by without saying hello? Is that what people do nowadays?" She's like, "I don't talk to her." I was like, "Yeah, but don't you find that weird that you're with your mother?" And when I was growing up, I don't care what kind of jackhole bully you were or popular girl you were, you did not snub people in front of their parents. You just didn't do that. I was like, "Is that girl? Are you sure that girl is in your grade?" "Yep." "Is she? Are you sure she's not someone's little sister?" "Nope. I think I know who's in my grade." I was like, "Touche." I was like, "She just walked by? That didn't bother you?" She was like, "No. That little girl did not say hello. We're the only people in that area, and we walked by each other, and she did not say hello to my daughter or goodbye or see you later or what. It just bothered me. You're too young for that kind of snottiness." So we're in the car, and I was like, "She didn't say hi? She didn't say what? People just walk by? What kind of rude stuff is that?" And the kid was just like, "She's just one of the popular girls. She just does that." I was like, "Well, what makes people popular? What makes people popular? Was she dressed a certain way? Everybody wears a uniform. Does she have fancy shoes? Is it like that she's popular because is her father popular? Like, is her father like a coach with the Heat? And so everybody wants to be her friend because maybe they'll get free Heat tickets? Is it that she has some type of money and she gives out her money during lunch? Like, what makes this little girl popular?" We get home and I just could not let it go. And I know because the kid said, "Mommy, just let it go." Said, "This doesn't bother you?" "No, it doesn't bother me. But you know what bothers me? That you keep being bothered by." Wanted my daughter to be liked by everyone, and my daughter was like, "The popular girls don't like everybody. That's just their thing. They just like each other." All three of them just like each other. I was like, "This just bothers me. Don't be bothered." The kid is a good kid. She has friends. She doesn't get into trouble. She doesn't get into fights. None of that. So the other day she came home and I could tell she was upset. I had to pull it out of her a bit, but she was upset. She was trying to maintain a stoic face, and then the little tears start welling up in her little fat face. "What's wrong?" "Oh, Iris said that I cry too much." "What do you mean, Iris? Who is Iris?" "Some girl in my class." "What is she doing saying that you cry too much?" Now, sometimes my daughter does cry when she doesn't get her way because she's the only child in a household full of adults. So, of course, she's the little sun that we all revolve around. But look, I'm the only one who gets to call out that my daughter's crying too much, not some kid named Iris that I've never heard of. So what's the deal? My daughter had some cookies that I had baked for her class. I baked some cookies and I put them into little individual Ziploc bags, like 4 or 5 cookies for each kid. And my daughter passed it out to her friends because there wasn't enough for the whole class, only her friends. Little snobby, little snobby snob. She gave one bag of cookies to her Spanish teacher. And Iris thought that my daughter was being a suck up, not taking into consideration that the Spanish teacher actually said, "Hey, are those cookies? Could I have one? Mmm, those look delicious. Thanks for the cookies." It wasn't like, yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe my daughter is more crafty than I thought. But she did tell me that the Spanish teacher asked her for the cookies. And so she gave her some cookies. And because of that, Iris thought that she was sucking up. And because of that, my daughter started getting upset and started crying. So Iris said, "No one likes being around you because you cry too much." I said, "What? What? Who is this Iris? She better not be some fat Spanish chick. I will knock the bit out of her." Now, isn't that terrible? What a terrible thing to say. I have pulled out weight and weightism and racism out in this situation. I'm going to my base instincts. I'm not proud of it. Oh my God, I swear, if I was back in Akron, I'm sure I probably would have said, "Who is Iris? She better not be some fat white chick." Isn't that terrible? That is terrible. Terrible. I gotta clean it up. I should have said something like, "Who is this Iris? She shouldn't be some retarded multicultural chick." No, see, but now I'm going into mental health issues, so I can't say that. "Who is this Iris? She better not be, gotta think of an appropriate insult. I'm sorry." Anywho, I tried to do the right parent thing. And I said, "Well, you don't have to pay attention to Iris. If you want to give your Spanish teacher cookies, that's up to you. You don't have to listen to Iris. Who is Iris anyway?" Which is the lesson and the speech that the adults in the after-school specials would have said to the kids in the after-school specials that I grew up on. Now, see, that's if we were living in this perfect little pat little world. The part of me that was the outsider was like, why would she say that? Why would she say that? Why would she say that to my kid just trying to be nice? So I said, "Look, I'm not trying to be, I want to be supportive without babying my daughter. I want to be protective, but not condescending." So I'm like, "Well, you know, and I don't want to seem like I'm taking Iris's side. Like, oh, well, maybe she has a point or of this, this, and that. I don't want to do any of that. I'm here to support my daughter. You know, screw Iris. Who is Iris to me?" But at the same time, I don't want to damage relations and have my daughter think that her way is always the right way. So the real side of me said, "Look, a lot of times when somebody is being mean or a bully, a lot of times something like that is being done to them. So maybe she has been called a suck-up, or she has been told that she cries too much. And because that hurts her feelings, she's turning that out on you. That doesn't mean it's right, but that might be the reason. But if it bothers you, then definitely address it. You don't have to sit on it, but this is your decision." But it really bothered me, and I could tell it really bothered my daughter, and I wanted to make sure I wasn't going too far with it, but my base mother wolf instinct was like, "I'm going to give this little fat chick a knuckle sandwich." See, I didn't know what race she was, because I did kind of ask. I have to ask. My daughter's school is predominantly Latin because we live in Miami, and her school is for, I guess, it's like a magnet school, so for whatever reason, a lot of African Americans tend not to put their child or sign up their child for my daughter's school. A lot of Africans do, There's a lot of West Africans and a lot of Nigerians at my daughter's school, but not that many African Americans. It's mostly white kids and Latin kids. So I just had to know. So I said, what color is Iris? And she said, I don't know. And I said, yeah, but is she Spanish? No, she speaks English. I was like, that's not getting what I'm. My daughter is so desensitized, so sensitive, desensitized. She doesn't know what I'm getting at. Now, if we were back in Ohio, she would, when I was growing up, she would know exactly what I was getting at. She speaks English. I was like, okay, if we take mommy's arm, okay, mommy's arm is really tan on the outside and really light on the inside. Is she tan like mommy? No. Is she really, really brown like daddy? No. Is she more like Bachan, who's my mother, who's the Japanese lady, the old Japanese lady floating around in our house. Does she look like her? No, little brown. I was like, okay, how about the underside of mommy's arm? Is she like that? Yes. Okay. Because I just needed to know whether or not this was racially motivated. Everything in my life is around race. So I had to know, is this a race crime? Is this a hate crime? Or are they just being kids? It bothered me so much, I had to implement technology. There's an app on my phone that the kids' teachers asked me to install. It's software that basically I can track her behavioral progress or how she's doing on tests. And we can also text each other, the teachers and the parents and each other. And I sent a text at 11:30 at night, and I said, "Hey, what's up with this deal with Iris? Never heard of this kind of thing before, and this type of situation before, but the kid is really upset." Next day comes. Kid comes home from school. I said, "Well, how'd it go?" And the kid tells me that the Spanish teacher and her homeroom teacher got together and chatted. They asked her to wait outside. Then they brought Iris in, and then they brought my daughter in. Like a mediation. Like mediation. See, things are so different from back in the day. Back in my day, teachers did not give a crap. They would be like, "Well, kids got to work it out." They would have waited until it escalated to the point where the kids were beating the crap out of each other, and my kid getting suspended for being in a fight, and me being annoyed and having to come up to school and start cursing people out. That's when teachers and parents would have met. But in this case, they do not mess around. They do not mess around at all. Kids nowadays, they get into a fight, they get expelled. Forget the suspension, they get kicked out. So they do a mediation, which I guess is good. It's good. It's responsible. It's the right thing to do, right? Instead of giving people knuckle sandwiches. So I said, "What happened?" And they asked Iris if she said any of those things about the kid, and she said no. And my daughter said, "Yes, you did. You were talking about me. You talked about me in my face and behind my back." I was like, "Wow, really? It's like that?" And my daughter said yes. And as she's telling me the rest of how it all played out and how Iris started crying and they had to apologize and shake hands and all that, I was like, wow, the kid has a real big pair of cojones. Because I don't think if I was at her age at 10 in the fifth grade, I would have been bold enough to tell somebody, yes, I know that you've been talking about me. I would have just kept that to myself, like, oh, is this going to, if I say the wrong thing in this meeting, is this going to end up being a beat down later on? But the kid, I guess she just has that level of confidence that I've never had. Oh my goodness gracious. So, I guess I did good. I guess I did good, right? I did good. I think I did good. Oh, that confidence. You know, the adult in me wants to be sensible and reasonable and say, well, she's a child, so of course the kid is going to have that level of confidence. But the parent in me says, wow. That is some kid. That is my kid. Surely I had something to do with that. Yeah, even as I'm a grown up, certain things still get me nervous. I was asked to do career day at my daughter's school. I was nervous and excited to the build up of career day because I was torn. Well, I do comedy. I do comedy, but I don't make enough money off of that. Nowhere near money off of that in order to make a living off of that. And I have a day job that is cool, but it's not like a big, powerful type of job. It's just what I do to pay the bills. But my day job, I think, would be seen as more a job that kids would understand. So I was torn of what I should do. And I asked the kid, what should mommy do? Because deep down, I don't want to embarrass my daughter. I don't want to embarrass her. Even with all of her, her big cojones. I want her to be, if I bring something to the table, I want her to be cool with me bringing that to the table, especially if it's her arena, which is her school. So I was going back and forth, and the kid was like, yeah, of course you say you could do comedy. But you could do the other job, too. And I said, I don't know. I was torn. And then I started, when I asked the school counselor who was in charge of it, and I told her what to do, she was like, oh, well, that's, you know, this is not any pressure. This is just to get the children interested and get their wheels turning in their minds of the options that they can do in their life. So you can totally do both. That's not a problem. You can totally do that. We're not expecting people to sign up the next day. Just give them an overview. That's not a problem at all. And I started thinking, I said, well, what do I do for career day? Is there like booths? No, you're going to go in front of the class and you'll speak. And I was like, this is just like those after school specials or those TV shows or the sitcoms where the parent speaks in front of the class and then the other parents are watching the parent do their thing. And then not only do you get judgmental looks from the kid, but her classmates and the other parents thinking, wow, you're not legit because you're saying you're a comic, but you're not getting paid for stuff, and I don't see you on television, and I don't see you on movies, and you're not Kevin Hart. And I was like, oh, this is going to be terrible. So I just agonized, like, oh, I just don't want to embarrass my kid, and which I do, and then I started thinking, what kind of material do I do? Because the kid told me, of course, mommy, you're going to tell jokes. I was like, what? I don't have material for fifth graders. I said, mommy's not going to be able to do that. What do you mean? And I said, well, because I don't have those type of jokes. And the kid said, well, you're a comedian, right? And I said, yes. Well, don't comedians come up with new material? Touche, child, touche. But I was still agonizing. I don't do blue material, which is like dirty material. But, you know, I talk about, you know, my mom and growing up in Ohio and all kinds of things that they're not sexual at all, but more like adult themes, like the time when I was 15 and thought about, you know, when I thought about killing myself and leaving the suicide note, you know, that kind of stuff. Do you really want to do that in front of a class of fifth graders? And then I thought to myself, well, if the kid is cool with me doing both,
Then why don't I just do both?
And if the kid tells me, I have faith in you, Mommy, you're going to be great,
then why don't I just go and try to be great? So I said, you know what? I'm going to treat this career day just like it's any other gig. I'm just going to do my material, not talk down to people. I'm just going to have just feel them out. See, you know, have a little bit of some material prepared. Not 1,000% sure what I'm going to do, but I'll just do my best. Career day rolls around, and they had a little reception, breakfast reception for the parents. And there's this packet that they give you, along with a little chaperone, a seventh grader who will escort you from class to class. They had some pastries and some coffee and some Cuban sandwiches and some croquetas and some bocadito. They had a little bit of everything. I look at this list, and it's great that there's so many parents participating in this thing. There is over 50 parents on this list, and there's things like pilot, chef. I'm sure that chef was not fat. Police officer, there's nuclear power plant operator, registered nurse, detectives, special agent, a lot of military, because there's a lot of military folks around in the area. VP of human resources. And you go down this list, FBI agent, college professor, physical therapist. Go down this list, comedian. I was like, I think I'm the one everybody is going to keep their children away from. Because all the other jobs just seem legit. They're legit jobs. But I was like, just calm down. Just calm down. Be yourself. It's only illegitimate if you make it illegitimate. So I go to my first class. And this is the thing that's crazy about it. Career day, they broke it down to us after they gave us the pastries and the coffee. I guess that's to butter us up. But basically, we were responsible for these sessions. Each session is 40 minutes. 4 sessions, just you. I was like, what? There's no other parents or careers? Nope, just you. 4 sessions. Back to back to back to back. 4 40-minute sessions. 160 minutes of talking nonstop. That's a test even for me. Which explains my spirit guide, my 7th grade spirit guide, Yanel. I was wondering, I thought she was being so nice to me when she said, okay, anytime you're thirsty, just let me know, I'm going to go run and get you water. I was like, really? There's a waterfall? No, just in case, you might need water. I was like, wow, how nice. That's before I knew there was going to be 4 40-minute sessions. Back to back to back to back. It was like a job. It was like the longest comedy set ever. The longest daytime comedy special ever. Yeah. So, go to my first session. If it's not nerve-wracking enough, it's my daughter's class. My daughter's homeroom class. And I go in, and I'm interrupting their test. So all the kids already like me. They're like, yes! And I was like, wow, so what do I do? And I told myself, just like if I was speaking in a – if I was hired to entertain, to do a gig of what I'm not sure about, just introduce – tried to feel out the audience and go from there. And it worked out fine. What I did was I introduced myself, I gave them my background, education, went to college, went to grad school, was in New York, started stand-up, ended up in Florida, ended up with this day job, which is my job that pays the bills, got into that, so I could do my real job, my real career pursuit, comedy. I didn't have any jokes to tell them. Everything ended up being more of a funny story, and I tried to tie it in so it made sense for school. I told them, growing up, I always wanted to fit in. I wanted to fit in so bad that I would feel embarrassed when my mom would try to speak Japanese in public. And I was losing that ability to speak Japanese anyway. I spoke Japanese, and this is true. I spoke Japanese until I was probably about four, until about 4 or 5 years old. And then I realized that was not the language everybody else was speaking. And it just coincided with my mother really trying to push to speak English. And when you don't have any Japanese people to speak to, and you feel that you are alien, that you're being pointed out for the wrong thing, you stop wanting to pursue it. And to this day, it's only now, it's only in the recent years, do I feel any type of regret about that. But I haven't quite absorbed it yet. I haven't quite absorbed I lost that chance to be fluent in Japanese. Maybe it's something I'll go back to, but I don't know. There's so much weight about that. That's another episode. But I did tell them that I was not the class clown, but I like to read a lot. I like to write a lot. We didn't have access to cable and television, and I was a bookworm. And I did tell them that we were so poor that I told them that we were so poor that every Saturday, my mom, true story, would take me and my sister by bus to our library downtown, which is very true because my father had pretty much my mom spent all of her money on my father. So when they divorced, he ended up taking everything. The car, either he took it or it got repossessed. The motorcycle, the car, the van, all of that he took. And so we didn't have a car. Classy! We didn't have any transportation except the bus. So my every Saturday, my mom would take us to the public library, to the children's section, and they would run movies. They would run these little film shorts. And after that, we would check out books, and then we would take the bus and go home. And there was a McDonald's right across the street from the library. And I always wanted to eat at that McDonald's because we never went to McDonald's. We didn't have the money for it. And, you know, the people in the McDonald's commercials just look so happy. They look so happy. The food must be amazing and delicious. And one day, my mom said, you know,
today, after library, we go to McDonald's.
I said, what?
Yes, we go to McDonald's.
And I was like, wow, this is amazing. Couldn't wait to go through the movies. Couldn't wait to check out books. Couldn't wait to cross the street. We're finally going to go to McDonald's. We go inside, me and my sister, looking at the menu, and I remember this distinctly. I think I was like four or five years old at this time. I'm looking up the menu. I can't wait to order. What do we order? What do we order? And my mom is like,
no, no, no. Come over here. Come sit down over here.
She pulls us over to this table to the side, and she opens up her bag. And out of her bag comes these balls of tin foil. And she opens up the balls of tin foil, and basically they were hamburgers. She had made hamburgers. She didn't even know how to make hamburgers. She had just copied off of, like, she kind of guesstimated how this was supposed to work. So, these big balls of meat. Like, making a hamburger is an art. They have cooking shows now dedicated, entire episodes dedicated on how to make the perfect hamburger. You know, the hamburgers at McDonald's, they're all uniformly shaped. They have that perfect thinness. Everything's perfect round. It has that bun with a nice golden touch to it, nice and round and fluffy. You know, hers was like a big meatball, between two pieces of white bread that, you know, the meatball, the hamburger didn't have enough time to drain. So now the white bread is all greasy and one piece of lettuce is clinging onto this meatball for dear life.
Here, here's hamburger. we eat hamburger at McDonald's.
Yeah, so we ate hamburgers at McDonald's. She didn't specify. She did say we were going to eat at McDonald's. She didn't tell us we were going to eat McDonald's hamburgers at McDonald's. Well, my daughter's class enjoyed that story, as well as the other three classes that enjoyed my story. And they did ask questions. I ended up speaking to, including my daughter's class, two fifth grade classes, a fourth grade class, and a sixth grade class. And every time I spoke, it got better and better. I felt like it was truly like a comedy show. It got better. Every time I performed, it got better. And they did ask me questions. And some kid did say, "Do you think you're funnier than Kevin Hart?" And I told him my comedy analogy that I tell every single comedian and every single person who has asked me any kind of question about comedy, and I'll say that to you again here, Chippies, in that I enjoy going to buffets. I love going to Golden Corral. That's the type of chick I am. My thing is, whenever I go to Golden Corral, I know that I'm going to get a spinach salad. I'm going to get a spinach salad. I'm going to have the fried okra, and I'm going to have the fried shrimp, because those are things that I enjoy, and I know I look forward to those every time I go to Golden Corral. Now, when I go to Golden Corral, sometimes I'll look over and I'm like, why is there a carrot and raisin salad on this salad bar? That looks disgusting. I've never tried it, but I'm not interested. The whole idea of it is appalling to me. But you know what? There's enough people out there in the world that enjoy carrot and raisin salad to the point that they can put it on this buffet and they know people will eat it. They come out and specifically look for that carrot and raisin salad the same way I look for my fried okra, spinach salad, and fried shrimp. And you could see a light bulb bing, go off in all those kids' heads. And my thing was like, look, whatever it is that you're doing, you be you. Be yourself. Come from the heart. Don't do what you think that what you're supposed to. Don't do what you think others want you to do. You do it because you have to do it. You come from your heart, because there's only one of you that can express certain things the way you can express them. And if you have enough people out there that enjoy it, you'll just be like that spinach salad, or fried okra, or fried shrimp, or God forbid, the carrot and raisin salad. Yeah. So it was good. It was good. And I was like, why do I have to? Why am I even worried about this? Why did I worry about career day? Why? This is ridiculous. If anything, I mean, what did I think they thought I was going to be a fraud? I don't know. If anything, the people that should have been thought of as a fraud is this, like, there's a couple of people on this list. It just lists business owner. What the hell is that? Business owner. I actually met one of these business owners during the parent reception beforehand. And, you know what? He sells hand sanitizer pumps, the pumps that you would have in the bathroom in a public place, those plastic pumps. I said, this is what's crazy. I was like, you know what? When I was in college, I actually worked in a factory that made those, which is no lie. No lie, I worked at the Gojo factory in Akron, Ohio, and I made Purell hand sanitizer pumps for a summer. And I could never understand. I was on a line. Not a line, but basically they gave us the supplies, and we had to stand up at these, like, tall podium things and assemble these things together. And they would come in different styles, and you just tried to bang out as many as possible and snap it together without snapping your fingers off, your fingernails. And I remember thinking, while I was working at the factory, why the hell are we standing up for them? Does this really make us more productive to stand up for 8 hours straight making these hand sanitizer pumps? So this showed me, career showed me a couple of things. Number one, you are as legitimate as you make yourself legitimate. If you believe it, it's true. I believe that I'm a comedian and I have this day job to support myself. So if I'm believing in the dream, my dream is my reality. So there's no one else out there that can tell me that this isn't my reality if I believe my reality. Number two, kids are awesome. Kids are awesome. They really can be. When they're not being jackasses. Because I did have a kid ask me, "Do you know such and such? Do you know such and such? Do you know such and such?" All these like famous comedians. I was like, ironically, actually, I do. And I wasn't lying either. I was like, "Yep, I knew him. I interned for him. Yes, I did a show with him. And yes, I'm cool with him. So yes, I do actually know these people." No lie. And then the third one is, the whole thing with me talking to the guy who makes the hand sanitizer purification thingies. Yeah, it just reaffirms I am awesome at cocktail parties because damn it, if I don't have some fun factoid for every single person that I've run into in my life. What? You sell hand sanitizer dispensers? Oh, I used to make hand sanitizer dispensers. Oh, that would be an awesome game show. What do you know? All right. So anyway, I need to take this nap because as invigorating as this episode has been, yeah, I need to lay down. That's how I'm about to get down. I'm about to lay down and digest. And let me. I will say one thing. I will say one thing. When I went to the cafeteria for African American Eat Lunch with Your Child Day, my daughter's whole class, they cheered for me when I came in. They're like, "Yeah!" Well, actually, they said, "McDonald's!" I guess that's my tagline. There's nothing like seeing there's nothing like seeing 50 fifth graders in the cafeteria all crouched together, all say, "Hey, it's the kids about McDonald's, McDonald's." I bet you. I think that's why. Now I realize. I think that's why the other parents were giving me the stank eye. I think they thought that I brought McDonald's in for the class, and I was like, "No, I don't. You're gonna have to eat this honey glazed barbecue chicken, collard greens, sweet potatoes, and seasoned French fries, just like everybody else." All right, Jimmy. Let me know what you think. Hit me up on social media at Blackanese Pod, BlackAnesePod. Also on email, blackanesepod@gmail.com. Twitter too. Twitter. Tweet me. You can tweet me under Blackanese Pod or at Brett Thompson. And there's a Facebook page. And website still working on it. It's coming together. It's coming together. I swear, it's coming together. Thank you so much, Chippies, for this time. I really appreciate it. Remember, there is no me without you. Until next time, see ya!